Backseat Producers, episode 170, True Grit.
It's like the heat mullet.
He is all ball.
Rick Shaw.
No brain, all ball.
Oh yeah, I mean, to be a session man, you gotta be the best of the best. I know, because I failed in that endeavor.
That guy is an asymptote of talent.
Burt Reynolds, Ray Liotta, John Rhys Davies, Jason Statham in a movie about a video game set in a fantasy world. Hey, this is Tony.
Hey, this is Daryl.
This is Tony.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
Tony, tell me a story.
So yesterday, I left work. Got out to my car. As I rounded the front end of the car toward the driver's side, I see glass.
More action.
Continue rounding the corner, there's a hole in my window.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The driver's side rear window busted out. Looked in, I was like, what? Nothing appears to be missing. In fact, Holden's DS is still in the back seat. That's weird. Looking around, don't notice anything out of place. Check my console. My checkbook is still there. The CDs are still there. The stereo hasn't been forcibly removed from the vehicle.
And you have all your checks.
I have all my checks. Okay, so I know how this works. In the city of St. Louis, it's worthless to call the police for a car break-in, especially in the area where I'm parked during the day. It's a moderate crime area. Mm-hmm. There are break-ins frequently.
What surprises me about this is that somebody smashed in your car window inside of a fenced-in lot.
It's inside of a fenced-in lot. Now, the gate is wide open, but you have to walk up a driveway that is wide open. I mean, there's no hiding. When I park smack dab in the middle of the parking lot under a light post, except for the cars around me, there's nothing around. You can't hide. You're exposed out in the open. They bust
That's what
in.
I got arrested for the first time. Being
exposed out in the open. Yeah, that happens. You have to be careful.
So someone really busted in. It wasn't like some ice flew out.
Well, that's what I thought at first, and I was like, did something weird happen? Because this just doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah, because this happened to me the other day. I parked my car, and all the ice that was on top, like, it melted up and then slid off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought I almost did damage to the car next to me, but I just left quick.
That's an interesting.
Well, and we've got a lot of construction where our building is under construction. Did somebody, did a tool fall off of a truck? I don't know. This is just weird.
Bullets flying?
Yeah. Well, I actually kind of looked around because I figured if it's a bullet, there's going to be another hole somewhere. It's just glass. Right. I don't have bulletproof glass in the car.
And it wasn't wet inside or anything.
No, it wasn't wet. There was,
All right, here's my alternative theory. The one thing that was missing was your box set of Queensryche.
Wait, it gets better. So I'm about three quarters of the way home, and I think...
Oh, you drove home with it?
Yeah.
God, that must have been cold.
It really was. It's got a good heater. Crank the heat all the way up. Now, I start driving, and if you ever drive with one window down, especially a rear window, you get this really weird buffeting sound. Mm-hmm. So I rolled the other window down and back to stop that noise. So it's cold. But the heat's blowing, so I'm like getting a cool breeze from behind.
Yeah, it's like the heat mullet.
It is. Yes.
Your business in front, but frozen back.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So, I get about three quarters of the way home and think, there is something that I thought was in the back seat, and it's not. So I get home, and I look around the house and the places where I normally would put it. It's not there. Look in the trunk of the car. It's not there. Call over to my folks' house, because my folks picked up Holden, because he can't ride in the back seat with glass all over it. I said, hey, did I put hold on the phone. Dude, was that black bag at your feet? Yeah, it was there. Okay.
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
What's the black bag?
It's a laptop bag.
Crap.
Full of my D&D books.
Oh! That is awesome.
So they got the sentimental value of it was it had my first D&D book in my red box original D&D book from 1981 that I got for my 10th birthday. So that was kind of a bummer.
That is a bummer.
And your dice.
Hey.
And like $30 worth of dice and dice bag.
We're putting the call out tonight. Yee, he took the books. Meet us at high noon Saturday at the Shaw Gardens. We will be there. Heal yourself and make a fight.
So they got self-regret. Yeah, so they got three D&D books, the character sheets for our ongoing campaign, the maps.
You're gonna be so disappointed.
And my dice bag, which between the dice and the bag is probably like $30. This is the only thing that has had me laughing about this on and off for the last 2 days.
I mean, I do feel bad for you, but man, they're gonna be so upset.
You say, what sort of sick fuck did I get?
Yeah.
Oh
so,
my gosh.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, man.
Insurance, I pay good money for insurance. No deductible. I've got a rental car that I'm basically just paying the taxes on the rental per day. So, like, $2 or $3 a day. So
that's excellent.
Yeah. So, I'm probably...
I'm just letting know your personal... I mean, if there was an
accident... Let it in rear gear. There,
yeah.
You'd be
because you're screwed. Because insurance won't pay for any of that. I mean, you're just out.
Yeah.
Personal effects, you just don't get, period. But, yeah, they're taking care of the car.
Well, good.
I've got it.
Sorry about the D&Ds, but, man, I'm...
The only other really bad part of it is, so I talked to the rental guy this morning. He's like, so what were you driving? 2009 Charger. He's like, oh, so do you want another full size? It'll probably cost you about $5 a day, you know, plus tax. I'm like, yes. I'm a big guy, and if you can put me in another Charger, an Impala, you know, something with, you know, that's comfortable for me, that's wonderful. So I show up, and it's like, oh, well, we got 4 Impalas in the shop right now.
This is not how you want the conversation to start.
So, what do you got? We got an HHR. Now I'm not a car guy, and I have no clue what this means. I think he's, like, talking about some code for their vehicles. And I'm like, is this a class of vehicle?
Or HHR.
It's a Chevy PT Cruiser. It's a crossover vehicle. It's a piece of crap. It is terrible. Wow. And it's bright red.
Wow.
It is awful. I parked it in the garage. And normally I have to park, like, pushing up against things in the garage. So that's how I park. I did that. There's like an extra 6 inches of room on each side and like an extra foot and a half behind me from what there normally is.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you told them what happened to your vehicle and said something inconspicuous, they really didn't, you know, follow you to the letter on that when they awarded you the Apple Red HHR.
Oh, man. So we're really supposed to be talking about True Grit.
Whoa, what are we talking about next week?
Saving Private Ryan.
We're not?
No, we're talking about Close Encounters.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Saving Private Ryan.
And then after that, okay. Is Saving Private Ryan. All right.
Okay.
Spielberg Fest.
Yes.
It's
yeah,
like
that's
5 movies on there at Spielberg.
Yeah, I think we've got like 5. So we're doing Close Encounters, Saving Private Ryan, Jaws.
Jaws.
Minority Report and Schindler's List.
I've never seen Schindler's List.
I would like to make a vote. My favorite Spielberg movie isn't on there.
Which AI. Is? AI.
You know what? We talked about doing that one, but...
That was not...
It's controversial.
The problem with AI is not really a Spielberg movie, though.
Right, it's
one
he took
it's
over.
It's a Kubrick movie that
but
Spielberg
it is a Spielberg
finished.
Movie.
It does have some Spielberg touches.
I mean, Jude Law was in it.
Maybe we'll
never
add that.
A Kubrick movie.
Maybe we'll put that one back in.
Okay. And then, of course...
Is Minority Report... Did he direct that?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. I couldn't remember.
Because there was no Raiders either, but I mean, everyone's a huge fan of Raiders, and we've probably discussed it on Crystal Skull, so it's probably not worth discussing.
Right. No, I thought we did all three of the indie movies.
Did we do all three?
I think we did the trilogy at the same time.
We did the trilogy, okay. Then we did.
Didn't we do Back to the Future around then too?
Somewhere around then.
You guys did do Back to the Future.
Yeah. Yep.
How could we not? It's so good.
It is good.
Christopher Lloyd was on Fringe a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
It was good.
I need to watch that show.
Yeah, you do. It's great.
I'm like a loser because I quit The Lost ended. I didn't pick up Fringe.
Fringe is, I don't know, Fringe is great because the main female lead, like, isn't ridiculous. She's an FBI agent, and she's not, you never see her wearing heels, and her hair is always tied back in, like, a sensible pullback, and, like, she's a model, but they don't make her hot.
She's, like, a regular
dresser. Yeah, she's, like, a real chick. It's awesome. And she kicks ass. By the way, before we go any further, did you guys all see the D&D community last week?
Yes.
It was fantastic.
Yes, it was.
I did not.
You watch Community?
No.
You should watch Community because it's funny. But when Chang showed up dressed as a drow.
Full drow.
Full drow, like full black face and white hair. And the black just Disney. Like, are we just going to ignore this hate crime?
Yeah.
It was so awesome.
Yes, Luke, they did steal my vocabulary.
All right. True Grit.
True Grit.
High level review. Let's jump into this.
Go for it.
I thought it was great.
Next.
I thought it was great.
All right. Let's make it a threesome. It was probably one of the best interpretations of it.
I've never seen the original.
I've never seen the original.
Yes, I have seen the original.
I thought it was great.
I'll say this, though.
Consensus. Podcast over. Yeah. Anybody podcast else have any over. Good stories?
It's done. It's done. Thank you, everyone.
Can anyone beat my car break-in story?
Yeah, the car story. I mean, we really can't top that. I mean, it's over.
All right, so, acting.
Jeff Bridges was amazing. Deserves his nom. The chick was amazing and got slighted when she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress instead of Best Actress. Every scene has her in it.
Yes.
How is she not the main actress?
She does kind of, yeah.
I agree.
Well, the story
agree.
Centers around her.
It's the Heath Ledger thing.
Nah, it's not the Heath Ledger thing. It's they nominated her for the award that she's most likely to get.
Yes.
And not
so
the award.
Award her. Yeah.
Because she'll get that one easy.
Didn't they do that to Haley Joel Osment? Wasn't he nominated for Best Supporting and he carried that $0.06 movie?
Oh, yeah.
Young actors, the Academy has a bug against giving them such a high level award. Out of the gate like that. Because they figure they got time to, if they're going to grow,
pay their dues and win for a movie they don't deserve to win.
Right.
Yeah, which is my complaint.
They won't give them for a movie that they actually had to work
for. You should be nominating based on merit, not what you think they're going to get awarded for.
That's the way the Academy works.
Yeah, but that's stupid.
The nomination process is the actors vote in what category they want them in. It has nothing to do with anything other than how the actors vote.
It's made up of insiders.
And who
which is fine, but then don't call the categories that.
Well, the thing is she could have gotten a bunch of votes as lead.
That's an excellent point, though, because the Academy is so political that if you did nominate her for Best Actress, she really wouldn't have a fair competition because she has no political ties probably to anyone. She's too young for the industry, and she'd have no chance of winning. So as grotesque as it is to us, I mean, since it's a political thing anyway, I mean, you might as well recognize it for what it is.
Plus, the Academy, I mean, like you said, is political, and they have different motivations for doing it. Who in their right mind, as an adult actor, would nominate someone who is that much younger to a lead position when then producers are going to think, we need to find the next hot young actor to get them into that position. So they're going to look for anyone in their 20s, 30s, 40s.
Well,
everybody take a drink. That's like when Scorsese used to cast people who didn't have any acting experience, and then his films wouldn't win, and they wouldn't win they'd have to nominate them.
Exactly.
Direction, but they couldn't win, because if they won, then they'd basically be saying, hey, we want people with no acting experience
to
win in the union.
I have a couple rebuttals to that. The first one is that this chick was underage, and so it was a nightmare to shoot with her. Because they couldn't shoot past midnight. and all sorts of other weird
all
stuff.
All kinds of other rules? That's a good point.
Yeah.
Was so, she really, like, 14? And
yes.
And she wasn't a
yeah.
Female?
Well, she, at the time they were doing the, she was, at the time they were doing the scouting, she was 14. And during the filming, she became 15.
Yeah, but,
still, she's still considered a child actor.
In the original, wasn't the actor like 23 or something?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
She was in her 20s.
I don't agree. She was trying to play a teenager.
John Wayne was pretty old when they shot that.
61?
Yes, he was 60. Yeah, he was in his 60s.
Dumb. Anyway, go ahead.
But no.
The same age Jeff Bridges was.
They didn't feel that a young actor could pull off that role.
Was it a girl in the
yes.
first film?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Doesn't it kind of have to be?
I don't know.
Yes.
I heard Ron Howard was in it. It made me think, well, maybe Ron Howard was the kid. I don't know when True
Grit
was 69, so Ron would have been...
I don't know that, I don't know that the story would have
been. No, he
would
have been
in his teens.
Right. Yeah, if it was a male...
The story would have worked.
The story doesn't hold...
The book is written around the female voice.
So the book is... It's also a female.
Yes.
And
she's 14. And she's 14 at the time.
And second off,
that's okay. We have Luke here confirming everything we're talking about or correcting us. He should be here.
Like
Kim Darby.
Howard, it's a chick.
But my other point was is that yeah, sure, you're looking for they can look for that younger chick, but I mean Natalie Portman was nominated for Best Actress for Black Swan and she deserves it.
Right.
So like that caliber of actor isn't just going away.
No.
Although Natalie Portman really hasn't done anything up till now that was that stellar.
I haven't seen it, but you probably haven't seen Leon the Professional.
I have seen Leon.
Yes. To create a sense of
say,
irony. Wasn't she pretty young in that movie?
Yeah, she was real young in that movie and she was really fantastic in that
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, she was.
Too.
There you go.
She made the movie.
No, I've seen The Professional and Leon.
Well, yeah.
Both
I've
versions.
There's Leon the Professional and Leon the Professional. So
Jean Reno, it's good.
Yeah, it's
like
good.
It gets almost to that weird stuff, but then like they kind of back off from the weirdness.
It is one movie that I would love to see a remake of. Or not a remake. Not a remake.
Like an American?
Not a remake. Movie? I misspoke. A sequel.
Okay.
A sequel with Natalie Portman aged to the age she is now
and
in that same...
No.
No.
Yeah,
well. No, just her.
Yeah, just her.
I just want a vehicle for her to be in the
movie. Well, mostly. There's that.
Gary Oldman was also in it, and that was... Gary Oldman
was
fantastic
yes.
in it.
Oh, yes.
That guy does Unhinged great. Also, Luke's right. I hate to agree with him, but Matt Damon was also excellent.
Matt Damon was fantastic.
Although he was completely overshadowed by everybody else in the movie.
Well, he also played against type, though. His job was to be kind of a...
Dick.
Well.
Yeah, like... I mean, he was... Same with Josh Brolin. It was like, you meet Josh Brolin, you're like...
Yeah.
This is Josh Brolin. What
I know.
A loser. You know, he was so good. You know?
And when he shows up, it's like, that guy looks like Josh Brolin. Is it? Because he kind of looks like him, but that's
Gary
isn't Josh
Pepper
Brolin.
Is sitting there playing the character you think Josh Brolin should be playing, you know, and instead, Josh Brolin's, you know, the nincompoop, and it's just like, that's great acting.
Yeah.
You know?
All Everybody right. plays against his type.
Almost, except...
Oh, that was Barry Pepper, wasn't it? I was like, I know that guy.
It was Barry Pepper.
It's like, I know that guy. Why do I know that guy?
Here's the thing. Jeff Bridges should... Well, Christian Bale was pretty good in The Fighter. But Jeff Bridges was very good in this movie. And if he didn't win for Crazy Heart, which he plays basically the same character who doesn't shoot guns, again, he should win this time around because his character was phenomenal, man.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yes.
And I don't want to take anything away from Christian Bale because that movie was great, but, I mean... Bridges is awesome in this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't have a problem with any acting in this movie. I thought
it was all
fantastic.
It was all
and to see the level of acting out of, and I can't remember her name, the actors, the young girl who's the actor. And
Maddie something.
Well, that's her character.
That's her character name.
Oh.
Hailee Steinfeld.
Okay.
There it is.
Hailee. To see her acting alongside of those other great established actors and holding her own.
No pressure.
No pressure at all there. Okay. I thought she did a wonderful job.
In addition to the great acting, at no point in the story did I look at it and I'm like, God, I wish she wouldn't be that person. Like that, when we talked about Lovely Bones, we talked about how the sister makes reasonable decisions.
Yes.
Yeah, that fine with the whole story. There was no weird, unreasonable decision. Someone killed my dad. I want revenge.
And she reacts, like, even though she's definitely accelerated in terms of intellect, she reacts in many ways the way a kid would react in those situations. Which
yeah,
is really great.
She has a very strong sense of what is right and what is wrong, and she doesn't ever. There is no black and white. I mean, sorry, it's all black and white. There is no gray. This, you will do this because it is right and because I have the weight of law behind me.
And this is the
argue with me, because you know what? I've got a lawyer.
That I think is interesting about the movie. The thing that I think is interesting about the movie in terms of the genre is it's the first movie that's probably a good Western. It isn't a revisionist Western in a very long time.
Yeah, it stays true to form.
Correct, yeah. I mean,
it's true to the times.
All of the other great Westerns that have come out, if you want to call them great, I mean, basically the fact that they were made and they were pretty good, since the Western's like a dying genre, I mean...
Yeah.
Everybody says that, then they make a movie which revives the whole thing.
Right. Like, all of the other ones, the Jesse James movie, even you want to go all the way back to Unforgiven, this is a movie that is not ashamed of being a Western.
Right.
It doesn't have any morality about gunplay or...
You know, oddly enough, we're bookending the Steven Spielberg fest with Unforgiven.
Excellent. Well, Unforgiven's a great Western, too, but for entirely different reasons. I mean, Unforgiven started this trend of... I'm talking too much, but Unforgiven started this trend of movies where you analyze the character's soul as opposed to the external circumstances, and you're kind of like looking at the Westerner as we would today. Like,
right.
You know, like... In Jesse James, it's a psychological Western, and Unforgiven is a psychological Western. Mm-hmm. And this is just, you know, these people are who they are, you know, and Maddie raises that gun, you know, and there's no moral trepidation about whether or not she should raise the gun. It's just done, because that's the way
it's
they
what you, yeah, it's what you did.
Yeah, yeah, and I like that about this movie.
It is a nice change of pace, but, and you're right, because even like 310 to Yuma, mm-hmm. There's the whole, you know, I'm taking this guy, should I protect him, should I not? You know, there's that moral quandary to it. And this really isn't about that, it's just about the story.
Yep.
And so that's kind of refreshing, that you have a Western that isn't about examining the culture or making some big political statement about guns or the use of guns or, you know, whatever you're going to make a political statement about. It's just... telling a good story.
Well, it's the heart of it. It's an adventure quest.
That's true.
Yeah.
She even says, "I'm getting ready to go on a great adventure," like when mm-hmm. she's riding her mother mm-hmm. and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very much.
When you really get down to it, a Western is typically a morality play.
Yes and no. I mean, I think The Searchers was probably. Well, High Noon was pretty good, but.
Well, High Noon was a morality play.
High Noon was definitely a morality play.
Yeah. And they made no bones about it.
Yeah, that's true. And it was front and center. The Searchers was, too. But a lot of Westerns, I think, were just about, you know...
Well, like, it depended on
we have this to accomplish, let's try to accomplish this. And then it's about how they accomplish it, you know?
Well, again, they kind of reflect the times in which they're made.
True.
I mean, you go on you start back in the 30s and 40s. They're just pure mindless escapism.
Right.
And they get into the 50s and 60s, they get a bit more reflective until we get now to the Sergio Leone period, where they become the very dark psychological play.
I don't know if the Sergio Leone films are very psychological. Sergio Leone is the greatest Western director ever. I mean, he made the two greatest Westerns ever made. Good and the Bad and the Ugly, and Once Upon a Time in the West. His films are so stylistic, you know. I don't think there's ever any concern whether Clint Eastwood is a good man.
Yeah, but the thing is, he strips away the story, and it's all character.
Yeah, there is a lot of character in it.
It centers around the characters. The story is secondary,
right?
To it, it's all visuals,
right? And it's all about the gunfight.
And then we got into the '80s, where you got into the John Wayne epic, where the last gasp of that, where he's again trying to interject an adventure back into it. Right. And then we had the long period of the
psychological westerns. And
well, then everybody tried to reinterpret.
Well, and then there was the goofball westerns.
Yeah.
That came out there for a while. Young Guns Silverado. And Young Guns 2, Silverado.
Blazing Tombstone, Saddles.
Blazing Saddles. Where that it kind of...
Anything goes.
In some ways they were parodies of the genre. I mean, Blazing Saddles is definitely a parody.
Of
the genre. I mean, that's
that goes without saying.
Exists as a parody.
That it, even you can't in really the genre.
No, it uses the setting because it really, yeah, it really is not in the genre.
It's not really a.
It
Western
just uses
film.
The setting.
Yeah.
It
more comedy.
And then we came back to the 90s where it switched around again. Where we came back to again a morality play,
right?
And now we're kind of moving back into this cycle.
I don't want to take anything away from the ones that I've liked over the years. I think they're great, but I mean, when have we seen a movie that's just enjoyed being a Western?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's
sick, you know,
right?
I mean, and I like that about this movie a lot, you know.
And again, it's a reflection of the times too.
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about it within the genre of Western, because I grew up watching a lot of Lone Ranger kind of stuff, so it was like, was how they pretty much completely dismissed the Texas Rangers. I love that. I thought it was great because it was like, you know, in all of the stuff that I was exposed to, it was like, oh, the Rangers, they were badasses. They were the end-all, be-all of Texas law, you know. Well, and granted, this isn't in Texas. And that's one of the points that the girl makes.
What's also great about that is how Jeff Bridges' character is from the Kansas-Missouri border war, and he doesn't give a damn about Texas.
No,
I mean,
he doesn't give a damn about anything.
Yeah.
He was a criminal.
Right? Right.
It's like,
and then
like,
first time you actually see him, it's at a trial.
Yeah.
Where he's on trial. That trial was fantastic, by the way.
That was great. That was a great scene.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in it. A lot of the details were good.
Yes.
Just the little things. And like any Coen Brothers movie, there's a lot of points at which you laugh. And then there's also a lot of, like, Mark Twain stuff. The Pudd'nhead Wilson stuff, where, like, you know, here's this lady who's extremely intelligent, and all the dunces are in Confederacy against her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's typical Coen Brothers kind of stuff. So there's just a lot of details to mine, you know, even though the story at large is very good as well. So, yeah, it was just good.
Yeah.
What he said.
I'll quit talking.
No. Give us something to bounce off there.
We're enjoying listening to you.
Yeah.
Well, we can probably move to the spoiler section then, because I probably have nothing else to say.
We don't really
plot synopsis is...
We don't do the plot. We don't do the
no, we're not walking through the plot of this, because it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no... Girl shows up. Her dad was killed by a guy. The guy left. She goes after the guy. She hires Jeff Bridges
to help her, based on the recommendation of the... sheriff?
Yeah.
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 Well, no, yeah, the town sheriff.
Kind
of. Kind of a weak.
He's like, hey, I'm in charge of this city. Anything outside of the city?
Not my problem.
Not my problem.
That's what the marshals are for.
You know what? That's what the marshals are for. I have enough trouble right here. And I'm fine with that.
Which?
You know what? I have no problem with that. This is the West, and it's like toward the end of it, and he's like, you know what? And he wasn't a young man. So, as far as I was concerned, he was the Danny Glover, I only got 5 more days until I can retire. I am not doing anything stupid.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I am too old for this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost kind of hate to agree with Luke, but before he left, he wanted us to talk about one scene. When Rooster's rambling on while the chick cuts down the corpse, he sees potential danger and immediately goes on edge, becomes a completely different person. Like, the way that this scene was shot, he's right.
Yeah.
Wait, what is it again?
Okay, so when she climbs up the tree and she's cutting down the corpse, you get a shot of, like, back and then down where she's cutting the thing and then you see him down there and he's just kind of rambling on.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Indian comes up behind him. And, like, almost as soon as you see him see it, like, the rambling stops, and he, like, turns his horse around, and it's just, like, it's a completely different feel you get from him. He's no longer the old man in the outhouse. Or
he's on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or like asleep in the general store, and it's like you kind of get the...
He's gone from being Bruce Wayne to being Batman.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, he slips out of the old man.
He's not Clark Kent, he's now Superman. It's that same transformation that you've seen in the good actors playing those roles, where he's kind of the bumbling idiot.
He slips into Roland of Gilead from the Dark Tower. Tony, Jesus Christ, I'm hard now.
I still haven't had that.
Everybody take a drink.
Yeah. I'll put it into perspective for you. Yeah. He turns into Neville Longbottom in the end of Book 7. That's who he turns into. Everybody knows it. Like he does it every once in a while throughout the movie. It's fantastic. Like the whole... When she catches up to him after they've crossed the river without her.
Yes.
And then Matt Damon starts beating the crap out of her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he puts Matt Damon in his place, and it's like he slips in.
Let's be fair, though. Matt Damon didn't really beat the crap out of her. He was treating her like a child, which wasn't good enough for her, or frankly, Jeff Bridges, who didn't really care. But he wasn't, like, physically abusing her in any way.
Yeah.
He was swatting her. I mean...
Right, he was spanking, you know, take a switch to somebody, you know.
She was trying to get away, he kept going.
Right.
It was excessive.
It was excessive and unnecessary.
But he didn't... He reacted poorly to a bad situation.
Right. But it wasn't like...
He was an idiot.
Hurting her or anything.
No, he wasn't.
He was an idiot.
Let's
call it what it is. The character was a moron.
Which is what I love about Matt Damon playing that character.
He did a great job.
Like, reads the script and he's like, yeah, I want to do this. I mean, you know.
Because he can play intelligent very well.
Right.
And this character was not. But he was believable as a moron.
And what I really liked about his character was that he would try to go toe-to-toe with Maddie in terms of their, how would you say, like the floweriness of their language.
Yes.
Like, he starts speaking in the King's English the minute she opens her mouth. And it's just like, you can't even handle her.
Well, he makes no bones about the fact that he's kind of hot for her.
Yeah, as inappropriate as that is.
As inappropriate as that is. Well, it's a different time, though, too. I mean, you're talking about a time period where if they were married, getting married at the age of 15 was not uncommon.
Or maybe he courts her for a long time and then they get married or whatever, but it's very
Which is
proper.
Why the spanking scene is so awkward, because, like... She's beyond that point in her life.
Intellectually, yeah.
Nah, not even intellectually. I mean, for the
He's trying to establish his position of dominance over her.
Which is like a short sentence just completely establishes the dominance there.
Yes.
Well, he's not only trying to do that, he's trying to dominate the whole mission, too. Because he wants Cheney for himself.
Oh, yeah.
He just wants the money.
He wants his money. That's right.
Yeah, Rooster's already been hired, and anything after that is a bonus.
Right.
Yeah, in his mind, he's dealing with a child and an old fool. And both of them can outsmart him with one little...
Yeah, neither of them are either of those things.
Yeah. Both forget that the deputy marshal is the hardest man in Texas, and this kid is smarter than all of them combined, including the horses, and a lot tougher than both of them put together.
So I read an interesting article that compared Rooster Cogburn to Odin and Maddie to Tyr.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting examination of... And they even do the symbolic similarities in that he's only got one eye and Odin only has one arm. And in the end, Maddie only ends...
Tyr has one arm.
Tyr has one arm. Odin has one eye, Tyr has one arm. And that's the way they end up by the end of the movie. Odin is the rule of the wild and inconsistent but forceful and getting the job done. Means be damned, just get it done and attack things full force, which Rooster Cogburn does. He tells the story about how he does it, and in the end, he's riding with the reins in his teeth, shooting it. Guys, you know, full throttle, which is a very Odin kind of thing to do, where Tyr is more rule by order and organization and subtlety and sacrifice, being willing to sacrifice yourself for the law of the land. And Maddie plays that role as well.
That's very interesting. Like, and that's just the regular Norse legend? I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah, those are... Okay. That's just... That's part of Norse legend. The example they gave is... Odin is trying to keep the Fenris wolf... He's trying to chain the Fenris wolf. And he's like, all right, so I'm going to chain you up. And it's... I can't remember exactly how it goes. But Tyr says, look, as a show of faith, I'm going to put my arm in your mouth. If anything untoward happens, you can bite it off. Odin slips the chain around his neck, tightens it, it takes his arm off. Tyr's okay with it because, in the end, the means have justified the end. He lost an arm, but this threat to the land has been stopped. And Odin's wild and crazy ways prompted it, but Tyr's level-headed sacrifice is what kept it, you know, what brought it to a conclusion.
So is that all in the True Grit? I mean, is the story itself the way that it goes in the movie?
Or yes, pretty much. Yes. It's pretty close.
She even ends up without an arm at the end?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You can draw the comparisons. Matt Damon's Loki. Done.
True.
Matt Damon's Loki.
Branded. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, the Coen brothers were very insistent on making a more faithful version of the novel. Can I say Coen brothers since one of them's not really a brother anymore?
Oh, I think that's...
No, that's the Wachowskis.
Oh, that's Wachowskis. Okay, thank you.
No, they're still both brothers.
Okay.
The Wachowskis are no longer
brothers.
One is...
They're co-siblings.
Truth.
Okay, so the book was written... Do we know when the book was written?
About 1965, I believe.
Oh, wow. So not long before the first movie was made.
Right. It was out that... not very long before that. Oh, Charles Portis, 1968 novel.
Okay.
So the movie came out in 1969.
Yeah.
So it was very rapidly adapted by into the John Wayne vehicle. But it was at the time it was made, very interesting choice of characters. You had John Wayne, Glenn Campbell, and it was Glenn Campbell's first movie.
What role did he play in it?
He was LaBeouf.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, get this.
You know, I can kind of see him as the LaBeouf character, though. I mean, really.
This thing is, though.
LaBeouf is kind of like a rhinestone cowboy, when you think about it.
Yes, he is.
The thing is, though, Campbell's previous job, he was a session musician.
Oh, yeah. So Glenn Campbell's recording career happened after that movie, I guess, is what you're saying.
No, it happened before this. He had spent all his time as a recording musician.
Oh, yeah.
As a session guy.
But he wasn't just a session guy. I mean, by then he'd already recorded Rhinestone Cowboy and all those hits, right?
No.
No? Okay. So he was just a session
guy. Yes, that's where he cut his teeth as a session guy, and he started breaking out and getting into the movie role was his first, and I think about his only. I don't remember him doing any other movies of any consequence. And he had a TV show also in the 60s.
I mean, Glenn Campbell, I like Glenn Campbell. I think his songwriting is great. I think his career as a country singer is completely anomalous because I cannot... understand why anyone would think of him as a country singer when they hear his voice, but yet his songwriting is spectacular.
And his musical chops aren't bad either. I mean,
you
don't make a living as a session guy if you're not any good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be a session man, you got to be the best of the best. I know, because I failed in that endeavor.
So, you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know a session person when I see one when they're better than me.
So, another thing that I really liked about the movie and the story in general was the character motivations and some of the twists of character. It wasn't really a plot twist, but like when we meet Lucky, what was his name?
Lucky Ned.
Ned. That's what I thought. So when we meet Lucky Ned, when we actually meet the guy for the first time, I mean, you get this image of him just being this evil, no good, bad killer dude, and it Barry Pepper. Mm-hmm. And he's got kind of a code about him. And,
yeah, in a way,
and
yeah.
So when Chaney comes to him and tries to tell his story, you can see that he sees that Chaney is a liability. And he just wants to be as far away from this dude and this situation as he can.
Yep.
And he's like, you know what? We're going to go now. We'll send a horse for you. Wink. And just leaves him. And as far as he was concerned, he was just going to get away. Because he knows Rooster Cogburn, and he knows that this is not over.
And the interesting thing about him is he has more respect for what the girl has to say.
Absolutely.
Than for what Tom Chaney has to say.
Absolutely.
You know.
Because he's just kind of a no-good thief. She's got a moral cause.
Right.
And it almost like he's fearful of what is right. And he
in
knows.
Some way.
Yeah, I mean you kind of get that sense.
Fire,
yeah.
You know.
You kind of get that sense that stuff's going to go down on her side, and I know this. And if I leave Chaney here, everybody will be fine with just getting Chaney.
Yeah. Well, that's
if
the one they want.
Just gets Chaney, they'll leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. I'll put some miles between us.
Yeah,
because
I thought that was a very smart play for the villain. And it was really a minor role, all things considered. He wasn't in that much of the film, but it was a really well thought out character, and everything that played through that scene.
I mean, yeah. I think all the character motivations ring pretty true. I mean, I wouldn't have really second guessed them all.
No,
you know, which just goes. I mean, I guess that goes really to the script more than anything. It's, mm-hmm. it's a well written script, or that the book is well written, and those things were just adapted into the script. But,
There were characters of varying levels of intelligence that stayed consistent
yeah.
at those varying levels of intelligence. Maddie was smart. She wasn't wise, but she was smart. Rooster Cogburn was wise, kind of smart, mostly wise.
Street smart.
He knew the score. Yeah, he knew the score. He knew how things were going to go down.
And both characters
LaBeouf, and LaBeouf was a moron with no wisdom. But he had determination.
All three characters had balls.
Yes.
That's what I yeah. Because LaBeouf, when he goes into the cottage...
He is all ball.
Rickshaw.
No brain.
All ball.
All ball.
He comes out, and there's like four guys there, and he's like, guess we're going to get into a fight.
Yeah. He doesn't back down. He doesn't cower. He's just... okay, let's make this happen.
He's all piss and beans, but no brains.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But again, this is a nice little trilogy of characters here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the two forces of nature, and you've got the one set of brains that's trying to steer them in the right direction, but they keep bouncing off each other.
I mean,
she's the only organizing force in this thing.
It's almost such a traditional film, in some ways, that it's difficult to talk about. Because everybody pretty much agrees that it was a great film.
The acting was great, the story was great, the characters were well done.
And that its formulation is pretty, you know, standard.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't really, I mean...
There's not any big twist of plot, there's not any twist of character. The characters are all completely consistent throughout. The story... If anything, the only twist of plot is after Chaney gets killed and she falls down the hole.
Right.
And really, if you didn't know she was going to fall down the hole, you weren't paying attention because they said two or three times, hey, there's a hole over there.
Don't fall in it.
It's a 100-foot drop.
Yep.
So, I mean, and that wasn't that big of a twist.
What did you make of the ending that resulted from that? I mean, obviously, the snake bite and the... And losing the arm and her last comments and all that.
I thought it was a fitting ending to the story, and it kind of neatly wrapped up the representation of the West. I mean, at the time you were on that cusp of the Old West and the New West. Very, very similar plot to No Country to Old Men as far as thematically. the Old West and the New West, just in a different generation, you know.
Also,
he was a product of
Unforgiven too. I mean,
right, right. But I mean, just speaking as another Coen Brothers movie,
right?
So you had the Old West versus the New West. I think this was a little more clear cut that it's New West, Old West, and didn't have to have quite that same Tommy Lee Jones voiceover story that you needed at the beginning and an end of
That's
No
just
Country.
Because time literally passed in this movie,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, enough
That's
time
true.
Passed where it was just like it's a different world. It's been maybe 20 years.
Well, the way they played it differently in No Country was that he talked about his father,
right,
and the West that his father knew, and the land,
right,
the time that his father knew, and the time that he is in now. The interesting things and the interesting juxtaposition is. In True Grit, you're going from a more wild, uncontrolled time to a more civilized, orderly time. In No Country, you're going from a more orderly, more civilized, more genteel world to a world that's a little more out of control, more violent, more crazy. So, it kind of plays true to being the West.
Right.
So it's, I think that's interesting in how the Coen brothers have looked at it from both sides and showed how it's kind of cycled back and forth, but they did it in reverse,
mm-hmm,
by telling the more modern story first and telling the older story second.
Currently.
Yeah, very true. I mean, they're both the only adaptations they've done? Are these two films?
Is that
no.
Correct?
No.
I mean, because you can make the argument that Oh Brother is an adaptation.
Of the Iliad.
The Odyssey.
The Odyssey.
Or the Odyssey, I'm sorry. But, I mean, they wrote that. Well, that's pretty...
You can make the argument, because it's pretty...
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, it's not word for word, but it is close enough.
No, he's Help us. No, he's right here. Have the Coen brothers done any other adaptations?
No.
There you go. There's your answer. No.
The answer is NO on the screen.
Big Lebowski wasn't an adaptation?
No, it was original.
It was original. Oh, that's right. Lady Killers was a remake.
It is. It's true. Yeah.
That was a remake.
Lady Killers was a remake. That was a pretty good movie. A little underrated in the... I like that movie.
That is a weird movie. I didn't care for that one.
It's funny.
It
doesn't aim high.
No, it doesn't.
But it's still great. Neither does Intolerable Cruelty, but I like that one too.
I'm trying to remember that one.
This one with Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes.
And
was that them too?
Yeah.
And wow.
The divorce.
Yes, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think we've tied up through grit.
I'm disappointed that Luke couldn't make it and show up as the Bear Doctor.
Yeah, that would be
He
awesome.
Said that's his Halloween costume this year.
That's fantastic. I'm in for that. He should...
He won't do that.
No, he won't. He should do that. He should do that for Archon. He should do that for Archon.
No, everything that you suggested has been awful, and we're
forcibly cutting it.
We actually kind of want you to go drive, so you may get into an accident. Of course, I talked about the scene you were talking about because, goddamn it, Jeff Bridges is like. The Jeff Bridges, Roland of Gillian comparisons in this, like when you read a series of books, you get this image, and the image I have of old Roland going around shooting things, like when he shoots the snakes, I am in. I'm like, that is goddamn Roland. But nobody here has read the books.
Nope.
So.
Is this the Dark Tower thing again?
Yeah.
All right. Take a drink, everybody.
Dark Tower's not on the list.
Oh, it's not?
It might as well be.
That is now.
We'll add it.
First off.
All right, so last big
when
question.
When the movies come out, we'll see what's up. Because they're coming in 2013.
Are they going to be directed by...
Ron Howard.
Oh, really? I was going to say it would be the other guy who directs all of Stephen King.
That is simultaneously Frank Darabont?
Frank Darabont.
That is simultaneously disappointing and not disappointing.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, because they're doing a weird thing. They're like doing a movie and then a TV series and then a movie.
I would love to see Darabont
do something. They're doing a movie, a TV series, and then movies in between every season.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Does sound like a lot of work, but you know what?
Bowed out.
But you know what?
It's like
I got the crazy eye for the Dark Tower, so if they don't do it properly, I'm going to be pissed.
All right, so last big question, everybody's mind. Will this movie win the Academy Award?
No.
No.
Ah. Unfortunately, no.
Ah.
It may deserve it, but it probably won't win.
Yeah, I don't think it will.
I can almost guarantee that it won't.
You know what? I don't think it was...
the best picture.
It wasn't artsy enough to win.
Artsy isn't necessarily the word I was looking for, but more...
The Academy likes to pick movies that are more inaccessible.
Not always.
It doesn't have its films with an agenda. I know that, and I don't like that.
The agenda is the word I'm looking for.
That annoys the crap out of me.
Yeah, this is why I didn't say The Hurt Locker, because I hate modern war movies.
I actually heard that was a pretty fair film about...
I've watched half of it. It's on my DVR right now. I've watched half of it. It's okay.
I don't like rah-rah movies.
It's not rah-rah.
Okay.
It's kind of
it
like,
is not. It's
but you've only watched half of it.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine that it's going to go rah-rah from where they've been so far.
Its tone.
modern war movies always end up rah-rah. Like even
really?
Even 300 had a lot of that.
That's
going
not
on.
A real war movie though.
That's, you're right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Even 300 had a bunch of that.
Films about modern warfare are very rarely.
You need to watch more war movies if you think they're rah-rah. Mm. Especially like Platoon, Full Metal Jacket.
How are those modern? Those Full Metal Jacket was from the 70s.
No,
well,
no,
the 80s.
Modern warfare.
Okay,
is what you're
but
about.
The 80s but was 30 years ago.
It's still
that's no longer modern.
It's still
within this era.
Oh, are you kidding me? That's no longer modern.
Well, until we
I'm
get
talking,
somewhere.
Okay. All right. Let's just draw the modern line.
It has more
post 9/11. How about that?
It has more modern sensibilities than the movies you're talking about.
Post 9/11.
Post
war movies.
Yeah, I can't watch post 9/11.
Saving Private Ryan.
No, it's
98, excuse me.
You got Atonement, which is a British, it's a war film about World War II.
We talked about that.
Yep.
That movie was terrible.
I liked that movie.
I liked it.
Oh, no. That movie had an incredible last 5 minutes.
You've got all kinds of anti-war movies.
It did have
movies,
an incredible last 5 minutes.
In the Valley of Ella is probably the worst movie ever made.
Whoa. Lost in Translation is the worst movie that's ever been made.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but if Paul Haggis writes a script, it's usually very likely that it's the worst movie ever
you
made.
You are wrong.
Oh, my God. First off, it had Bill Murray in it, which is automatically puts it in the bad category.
Wow.
That guy
can't get more wrong.
That guy
this
is an asymptote of talent. Like, the lines approach him, but never meet him. That's how bad he is.
Did you like Zombieland?
I loved him.
He was only good in Zombieland because he died.
I still think Ghostbusters is the best movie he ever made.
Oh my God, that is... We can't be
I'm
friends.
I'm old school, though, on that. I love Ghostbusters. But no, you gotta see horrible films, like downright bad ones, like In the Valley of Ella, or...
The Dungeon Siege movie.
Or that
in the name
one
of the king,
that
they
Brian
it.
De Palma whoa, whoa, swore whoa. Would stop the war as long as if he released it. And then no one went to see it.
And it kept going on.
It's just...
The Sound
Redacted,
of Thunder.
That's the name of it.
No. First off, In the Name of the King was terrible, but not as bad as Lost in Translation.
No, it was worse.
No.
It was far, far worse.
No.
Lost in Translation was a good movie.
Jason Statham, come on. What did you expect for Jason Statham?
Burt Reynolds was in that movie.
So was John Rhys-Davies. We can play this game all day. So was that guy, Ray Liotta. I hate Ray Liotta.
Don't we love Burt Reynolds, too? I love Burt Reynolds.
See,
how are you got
Ray Liotta? Wait. Let me bend your mind a little bit. Burt Reynolds, Ray Liotta, John Rhys-Davies, Jason Statham in a movie about a video game set in a fantasy world.
You had me going up until the plot. I mean, I love all
oh,
the
don't
actors.
Worry. Don't worry. There's no plot to speak of.
And it's directed by Uwe Boll.
Oh, that is.
Oh my God.
Count yourself lucky.
That movie was not directed by.
Yes, it was.
No, it was.
Yes, that's it
not,
was.
I gotta look this up. Because I don't
yes,
think that's right.
I don't think that's
right.
Uwe Boll makes movies under a German tax law that states that if your movies don't make a certain percentage of box office back, they actually give you tax credits enough to more than pay for the movie.
It's the producers. It's the producers in real life.
He makes
money.
Oh,
Ron Perlman was in it, too.
Ron, that's right. Ron Perlman was in it. He makes money on movies that do terribly at the box office.
Oh, my God. And he gets mad at people because they say they're crap. Yeah, in fact.
And he, like, fights. He
stages
like,
boxing matches. Yeah. He'll take anybody in the ring who criticizes his movie.
Really?
Yeah, really.
He challenged Harry Knowles to a boxing match.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, listen. Listen. If you can produce crap but stand by it that fervently, come on. Come on.
Yeah.
It's True Grit right there.
That's right.
I heard you had True Grit.
That's for sure.
So we're decided that Lost in Translation is the worst movie that's ever been made.
Lost in Translation is in the Valley of Elephants movie ever made. Lost in Translation is also a good movie.
I pose that it's The Sound of Thunder.
I've never seen that movie.
That movie is terrible.
I'm not watching that movie to find out.
Don't bother. Read the short story instead.
No, I'm not going to do that either.
The short story is really good.
Ray Bradbury short story?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I have read that story.
Yeah. It's a time travel story. You like the story.
Yeah, I have read that story.
But in the movie, apparently you can only travel through time waves because, you know, when you break something in time, waves of time change things.
I watched something recently that was a time travel romance.
You jump backwards. Now, the only way you can successfully travel through this wave of time is by jumping backwards as it approaches you.
Yeah, like the ribbon from Generations.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's that
no,
terrible.
This makes sense.
That was
it's
a really good move for Malcolm McDowell's career.
You know he got death threats?
For that movie?
Yeah. Because he killed Kirk.
Oh, really? Yeah. I would have thought it would have been for Clockwork Orange. But, I mean, you know.
That was a good movie.
It
was
even Hasselhoff is Han Solo.
But,
wait a
like,
minute.
That movie was so controversial.
What is Richard talking about?
You know.
Damn it. There was something I was watching recently that turned into
time
a time travel romance.
Romance.
I can't remember what it was, but I was like, holy crap, are they going there? Yes! But
and then freaking Parks and Rec is like ripping off dialogue from our shows. The one gal talks about, oh yeah, if it's got vampires or, was it vampires, werewolves, ghosts, or is it time travel romance? I mean,
That was it! If it's a time travel romance, I'm in. I'm like, yes!
So I got one for you to kind of bring it back to the Coen brothers in a way.
Alright.
Malcolm McDowell, since we mentioned him, said his favorite American film was Fargo.
Really?
That's what he said.
I've never seen it.
And I was just curious where you guys placed True Grit in the Coendom.
It's not as good as O Brother.
O Brother's still the best?
It's a different kind of movie. For their serious work, I don't know, this is... I gotta say, this and No Country are right there together. Now, because they really have two different lines of work. They've got their comedy stuff, and they've got their more dramatic stuff.
Right.
And, like, you know, the comedy stuff is like Oh Brother and Big Lebowski and Intolerable Cruelty.
Right.
But, yeah, I think if you're just looking at the dramatic stuff, I got to say it's right there with No Country. Probably surpassing it, but okay. I've only seen it once, and I've seen No Country at a number of times, so I'm a little more biased towards that because I have seen it a few more times. Daryl?
Nope, I've got nothing more.
No, what was your referring back to this
you
question?
You don't have to answer the question.
where do you think the film falls within the Coen brothers?
I'm going to have to kind of do a limited amount because I haven't seen a whole lot of Coen brothers movies. This is probably one of their better ones. I'm comparing against to again for a drama. This is decent. I mean, it you can go to it and watch it and enjoy it without a whole lot of analysis.
It's a very accessible drama.
Yes,
you don't have to be entrenched in the
Dragon Wars.
D-Wars.
It's so bad. But I watched the whole thing.
Corrected.
No. It wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen. It was close.
This is the kind of movie that, I mean, because I know, because my parents took my nephew to see it. The three of them walked out enjoying the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a wide range of tastes there.
The thing is about Coen Brothers movies, and some of their comedies, you have to sit back and think about it for a while before everything hits you. as to why it's funny. Oh, now I get it. You know, like it didn't. You're so engrossed in it as it's going along that you just don't have time to analyze it. Big Lebowski is like that.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember that movie, but I was drunk and fell asleep on someone.
Well, there you go.
When I watched it the first time. Like drifted in and out. I'm like, oh.
So you were living the dude's dream.
Yeah, it was like this like weird meta reflection cathartic
watching.
Yeah,
what you were doing.
Rich is reminding me about the class of Nukem High 2. I'm going to go ahead and toss in the Evil Dead trilogy into all those terrible movies.
Oh.
Jeez. I do not like those
now,
movies.
Now I'm going to have to get in the ring with you.
Yeah, but those are B movies.
I know.
Those
are movies. They don't make any pretensions.
If you aim for it to be a great movie, and it's horrible, then
but you know what?
Yeah, but if you aim for a horrible movie, then you got a horrible movie. What's the debate there? It's a horrible movie.
It's a bad movie. And
because
I don't
coming to it as a different audience then at that point. It's almost as like I see B movies that are bad, and it's like they're supposed to be bad. So what's
but to hear tell, it's not a bad movie. And I disagree with that supposition.
Oh my god, Melina drove me to see the musical, and now she sings the songs all the time! I'm
Evil
like,
Dead
stop!
Musical?
Yes! It was terrible!
And I'm like, remember the tweets.
I'm like, this is just the movie!
Evil Dead, the band, is not a musical, and that is not punk rock.
Yeah, she's like, come see the musical with me. And I'm like, no, I didn't like the movie! How can you not like the movie? I'm like, because it was terrible.
Bad?
No, you liked it. I'm like, oh, fine. So we go see the musical. I'm like, oh, what a surprise. The musical is the movie, only
musical.
Sung, and with the splatter zone seats, so like they were spraying me down with food-colored soap water.
Yay.
Oh, no, that part was actually pretty fun. Because, like, it just like everyone. The stuff
I've
was,
seen the pictures.
The stuff was so sticky afterwards. I was walking out of the, because they do it at the one, some church in South City.
Mm-hmm.
I was pulling up tiles. My sandals were sticking. That part was funny.
But it seems odd that they're performing that at a church.
I was going to say.
It was pretty good.
Xanadu is awful.
Xanadu can be considered a crime against humanity.
First off.
That's
Sean Connery in the...
As a child, I enjoyed Xanadu. As a 10-year-old.
I would say this. If you enjoy a film as a child, I don't think you can strike it down as one of the worst movies ever made, because you enjoyed it!
I enjoyed it because I didn't realize just how terrible it was.
Doesn't matter.
I like the music,
I agree
though,
with Deuce on this one.
But I like the music. The music is good.
Well, if the music's good, that means it has a redeeming quality.
I like ELO. ELO puts together a good tune.
I will submit that In the Valley of Ella has no redeeming qualities whatsoever.
You're going to make me watch this piece of crap, aren't you?
I'm actually not trying to advertise the film. I should not. Like, I forgot the title. But believe me, it's awful.
I couldn't stand Olivia Newton-John. I didn't like disco. And I hated Xanadu. Especially when they kept repeating all the songs on the radio. I said, oh, God.
I can imagine.
It's bad enough they have to keep, they had a bad movie, but they have to keep repeating her, reminding us over and over and over of the horror.
I'll say one more thing about that movie that I hate. But I would choose title, I would never mention it. You would really hate it.
Why?
Because you came from a military family.
Oh.
You would hate it. There are things that you didn't tolerate in other movies that I frankly liked, like 28 Days and
V
for Vendetta and things, where I'm like, it's a little on the you know, south side, but it's going to be okay. Whereas this movie is just flat out awful. It's just flat out awful. And by south side, I mean I'm from South City, so
yeah,
I don't know what that really means, but
okay.
Hey, pop open the Oscar noms, since we're all here.
Sure. Read all 25 Best Picture nominations.
That's so ridiculous.
I think it is, too.
Well, we need 10 slots because there are 10 potential best movies. Yeah, okay, so pick the 5 best out of those 10, and then look, here we are.
All they're doing is watering down the choices and pandering to...
To the masses.
To the masses.
No, they're pandering to the dying theater market.
No, they're pandering to the masses and trying to get all those people, trying to let everybody have their movie be in the top 10 and let them think they have a chance.
Well, it's their fault for not ever rewarding good movies, except for the last, like, 2006, 2007, they rewarded The Departed and No Country for Old Men. And I was like, sweet.
What was 2008?
Probably back rewarding good movies.
No, 2008 was No Country for Old Men.
2008 was No Country for Old Men. 2007 was The Departed. No Country for Old Men was made in 2007. So I guess the
award so the award was in 2008. 2009 was...
But it was the best picture of 07. So what was the best picture of 08? Because I know 09 was a Hurt Locker, and I can't judge it. I haven't seen it, but...
No. 2000... Okay, of 2009.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what was the best picture of 08? Because The Departed and No Country were awesome.
Before we go there, damn it. They were all right there, and the stupid scrolling flash piece of crap took them away. Never mind. Go on.
What was the 2008 best picture? It was between No Country and Hurt Locker.
No. Yeah. Oh, I mean, it was between... Oh, I see.
Hurt Locker was between the two. Was 2009.
And right. No Country was 07. What won in 08?
No Country was 08.
No, it was awarded in 08. But the movie came out in 2007.
Because Departed was 06. That was a big moment in my house. Scorsese.
No. 2008 was No Country, then Hurt Locker, and then now.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah, yes. Because we did the Oscar. No. That's not right at all.
Here we go.
Here's your best pictures.
God damn it! Now I gotta look it up.
The Black Swan might win. The Fighter might win. Inception has no chance.
Nope.
The Kids Are All Right.
I'm picking Black Swan for best picture.
I mean, I would have to... Oh, you don't think The Social Network's going to win?
No.
No. Really? It's too germane.
Yep. Right. I think
there's
going to
be a fight ultimately between Black Swan and King's Speech.
I really like The Fighter. It's a shame it doesn't have a real shot. I really enjoy
it. Why is the chat room not fixed our... Does this thing give me a link to winners in the past?
No, like the current ones. You should probably look up past.
No.
But it's going to come down to that between those... Those two in the
what's an Oscar legacy? Here we go.
Five that lead with all these nominations.
Here we go.
No. Right. Well, Toy Story shouldn't be there for one.
Right.
Well, the two. Here's my
Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire.
Toy Story should either be in the animated category or it should be.
2007
in the
was
film
No Country. 2008 was Slumdog.
I mean, I'm surprised it was even nominated for a
2009. I don't even know why it's not on here
because it would automatically win in the animated feature, hands down.
Oh, you've got the.
But
we should do Slumdog Millionaire.
We have.
Yes.
It's gone. You bastards.
We did all five of them.
We did all five of them that year.
Yeah, because that year we went to go see them. We went to see all five.
That's when Daryl joined us.
Now I just have to go see them and then
that was
you know, post my thoughts on the Spooky Outhouse forum and no one answers.
I answered your thread.
You did? Sweet.
It's not my fault that you didn't read it.
Well, I already know
what it
says anyway.
My favorite part of it is you're like, my top five is these three, and then everything else ties for four. Like,
it's true. I said
now I'm calling you guys out for your top five. What?
But you didn't even post
it. What you think of the best. I didn't say you needed to list five.
Oh, no.
Seven if you want.
No. I have a strict top five policy.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Guess I better, like, add two movies. I'm going to feel...
You got to pick.
Lame.
The Wrath of David.
I mean, you really got to...
Come on,
we don't
really
call him. We don't call him
that
here.
Period.
He's the only one that calls himself that.
That's not true.
I call him A David.
That's fine. I'll work with it.
I call
he's
him
one of many Davids.
I call him douche.
That's also fine. A douche.
You're douche. He's douche.
Nice.
I'm
sure the Watchmen and Shawshank are on there. After that, I'm not sure. But
it means it's me and D's.
Scott Pilgrim.
How you just saw that movie? How do you know that that's going to be?
Oh, Watchmen came out last year.
Yeah, but Watchmen's had some time to percolate. Ten times. It's
whatever quality you need. Okay, first off, quality doesn't need to percolate. As soon as I saw Watchmen,
year,
I'm like,
Scott Pilgrim will not be on your radar screen.
I don't think that's
it,
true.
But
I don't think that's true at all.
No, he's deflated himself about that movie enough that.
I got a fleshlight and I named it Scott Pilgrim. Take a drink. I'm trying to hit as many as possible tonight.
People are going to die with this episode.
Alcohol poisoning is on the rise.
I'm surprised you didn't see JFK because you were like, I've not seen any of those movies either. And I was like, you saw Watchmen? You haven't seen JFK? Did you watch the opening scene where what's his face? You know, was apparently the man on the grassy knoll, and you haven't seen JFK? Come on, you gotta see that movie.
I've seen bits of it. It's a long
movie.
Right,
we are far enough away from True Grit. Let's go ahead and call it.
Good, because I'm hungry.
All right. Next week.
Close Encounters.
Close Encounters.
And then Saving Private.
Yep. See ya.
Bye.